atmosphere, a giant planet, and a beautiful cluster of stars. Watch for them. Our program is Stardate. Our writer-producer is Deborah Bird. We at Stardate want to send you a complimentary copy of our new Stardate magazine. To receive one, you'll have to send us your name and address at the University of Texas McDonald Observatory, Austin, Texas. Zip code 78712. We're not going to charge you anything for the magazine, but we are going to ask you to let us know where you listen to Stardate, please. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
Number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Ring damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Can you say date ever?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say date ever?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say date ever?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
Thank you.
not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
Yes, I'm doing it again. I'm playing the soundtrack to Polakotsi. I can't seem to stop playing that every time I'm on the air. It's just such a wonderful piece of music. About the worst thing I can think of is to play this music and then have somebody speak over it. But sometimes just things like that can't be avoided. Oh well. It's 11 minutes after 10 o'clock. The program is Brain Damage. I'm Eric Corley. I am afflicted, and hopefully you will be too by the end of our time together. We have a grand total of 18 degrees outside. That comes out to 64 on the wasteful Fahrenheit scale. And no weather. We have no idea what the weather's going to be like. I don't see any weather around here, but it's dark now. It's not raining. That's really all you need to know. We are accepting your calls. We don't accept collect calls. We can't accept collect calls, so don't even try. But you can call us at 632-6901. Tell us what's on your mind this week. We'd sure like to know. And think of all the other people out there that would also like to know. And all the ones that you'll be annoying by wasting their time with your petty grievances and other things that go on in your life. Main topic, of course, for tonight will be where should I spend the summer? Where should I go this summer? I've been thinking about going many places, but I can't think of any place to go. I mean, I might go to Montauk, but I'd sort of like to go further than that. You know, I'd sort of like to really explore something different. So if someone out there has been someplace that they think I would appreciate, or someplace that they think I'd be scared of, give me a call and we'll talk about it. 632-6901. That's the number to dial in area code 516. And as soon as we take a quick look at the news, we will go to the calls, assuming there are any calls. It'd be awfully embarrassing if I finish reading the news and there aren't any calls, won't it? Well, just so you know, the number once again, 632-6901, and that's area code 516. Nicaraguan. Oh, this is the part I like. It's really good. There's three different ones of these. This is, this is the second of three. This is New Cities and Ancient Lands, Africa. We just heard New Cities and Ancient Lands, China. And after this comes New Cities and Ancient Lands, India. Incredible stuff. Anyway, on with the news. Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega charges the Reagan administration has made a deliberate effort to kill peace talks. In a speech to factory workers in Managua today, Ortega said the U.S. wants to make dust of the peace plan. He charges Contra rebels met with State Department officials in Washington, to work out a strategy so the talks would fail. However, Ortega says his government is ready to resume negotiations. There are reports this evening that fired White House aide Oliver North concocted a pair of plans to kill Libya's Muammar Gaddafi. CBS and U.S. News and World Report say North wanted to use an Anglican church envoy to lure the Libyan leader to the site of an American airstrike. While the plan was rejected, the U.S. did bomb Gaddafi's compound in April 1986. CBS reports that after Gaddafi survived the first attack, North suggested that a friendly foreign leader phone Gaddafi.
Your call did not go through. Please try your call again. 718-2T.
I appreciate that, but I wasn't making a call. Where'd that come from? What's going on here? Something's bizarre. Okay. Well, let's not worry about it. Where are we? Killing Gaddafi. Yes. After Gaddafi survived the first attack, North suggested that a friendly foreign leader phone Gaddafi so his location could be pinpointed. Oh, I get it. Somebody was trying to phone Gaddafi around here, huh? Very funny. Well, we're not going to get through. CBS says the second assassination plot was also rejected by administration officials.
Your call did not go through. Please try your call again.
I can see, we're dealing with something here that it's kind of hard to get through to. Well, a report from Senate Democrats concludes that the Star Wars plan won't get off the ground militarily or fiscally. The study cautions that an early phase of the missile defense system won't be ready until the end of the century and won't be very effective. The Pentagon disputes the Democratic findings. Many of the nation's mayors say the federal government must do more to help cities. Mayor Arthur Holland of Trenton, New Jersey, says the federal city partnership has been interrupted during the 8 years of the Reagan administration. Participants at the U.S. Conference of Mayors say they need money from Washington to help fight AIDS, drug abuse, and homelessness. The Red Cross says German industrial giant Daimler-Benz has agreed to pay nearly $12 million in reparations. I see. Reparations for using Nazi slave labor. The manufacturer of the vaunted Mercedes-Benz was one of the many German companies to use forced labor during the Second World War. The chairman of the West German Jewish Council welcomes the agreement, but says it comes too late for thousands who've died. Soviet leader Gorbachev's policy of perestroika, or restructuring, has evidently taken root in another institution. The official TASS news agency says 16 members of the prestigious Academy of Sciences have resigned simultaneously. It's seen as an effort to bring new blood into the academy. Simultaneously. It's incredible. George Bush's campaign manager says the candidate relishes his role as the underdog. George Bush is an underdog? Incredible. Lee Atwater today told GOP activists in Denver that Bush enjoys it more if he's not in the lead. Polls have shown Bush trailing Democrat Michael Dukakis by as much as 15 points. Massachusetts Democrats today were basking in the success of their favorite son, Governor Dukakis, who's clinched the party's Democratic presidential nomination. Senator Edward Kennedy told the state convention that Bush is already a dead duck. And that is a look at the news. And as I look over at the phones, I see that we don't have as many phone calls as I certainly would have hoped to have had. 632-6901. Give us a call with anything, and then we'll go on to some more specific stuff. But I kind of like to leave the first part of the program open so people can sort of set the path of where we're going to go. 632-6901. The program's Brain Damage. The area code is 516. And you're on Brain Damage. Good evening.
Hello, it's Andy Global.
I somehow thought it was you. What's up?
A lot of things.
A lot of things? Well, they better be good.
You didn't read the whole news. There's much more that's going on in the world.
There's more that's going on? Well, yes, this is the Associated Press, so they don't always tell us the full story. But do you over there in, where is it, Farmingville?
Now I'm at my father's house in Fort Jefferson.
You know, you're confusing me. I finally get used to where you live, and now you move somewhere else.
No, I transferred the roof, and I'm living at my father's house for a weekend.
Uh-huh. Did this just happen since last week?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Because that would be a lot of news, but okay. Why don't you tell us what's happening then that we missed?
Let's see. You mentioned something about someone asked the government for more money for the AIDS research.
Uh-huh.
Now, I just thought of something. I say there are 280 million people approximately in the United States of America, right?
Yeah.
Now, I figured if each person in the United States gives $15, how much would that be? $15, that would be around $4 billion.
That would be, wouldn't even equal our defense budget, but yeah, it would be quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
Do you really think we can get all the people in the United States to agree on anything?
No. But, no, just think of...
I mean, you couldn't get everybody in the United States to agree that AIDS even exists, let alone give $15 to it.
Right.
We could somehow get the money from them, but that wouldn't be honest.
Yes, but just think, okay? We have the power for just $15 each person to get rid of AIDS. With $4 billion, you can get rid of it.
Well, now, how would we get rid of it? I mean, there's no guarantee, even with all the money in the world, that we will get rid of it. We'll move closer towards finding a possible cure, but...
Now, isn't that enough?
It's as much as we can do, I guess.
Yeah. But another thing that you have to think of is we're expecting the people to solve AIDS that haven't cured the common cold for 100 years.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Well, there hasn't really been that much of a demand to cure that.
Well, do you like sneezing and coughing a lot?
Well, it depends. You know, I've done worse things, so it doesn't really bother me that much.
And the main event, you want a vacation.
What's that?
You want to go on a vacation this summer.
Oh, well, I'm trying to think of where to go, you know? I can't really...
Okay,
I don't know if I want to stay in the country or go somewhere else, or I'm in a, you know, I need some help here. I need to know what's good.
I need to know your price range. How much do you make a year?
Well, that kind of stuff, of course, is sealed up in a vault, but I'm open to suggestion. And if I, you know, I'm willing to try to find a way.
Okay, come back to Jamaica, man.
Jamaica. Come back. You know, I grew up in Jamaica.
Right.
I grew up in Jamaica. In fact, I pass through there every time I go to the city. And the place looks a lot more built up than when I was living there.
Jamaica.
Well, I'd like to go back there. And I could afford that. I think it's something like $4 or $5, actually.
Why? Hawaii.
Oh, Hawaii. Why Hawaii? Well, that's a good question. I don't know.
Because you can meet a lot of girls there, and you can get married.
Well, I don't think there's any more girls in Hawaii than there are on Long Island. They just wear those little hula hoop things, whatever they call those things. That they throw around your neck. Is there a way to make them stop doing that when you get off the plane? Because, I mean, if I went to Hawaii and they tried to put one of those things around my neck, I'd make a scene, because they look silly. You know?
Everyone wears one, you know?
And it's so presumptuous, you know,
like
I have to wear this silly thing. Like, maybe I didn't come there for the sun. Maybe I didn't come there for the beaches. Maybe I came there just to, like, pick up a Hawaiian edition of TV Guide or something.
I don't know. But it's like a new beach that, you know... No one's really embarrassed when everyone does it.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess, you know, there are new beaches on Long Island.
Yeah.
By Smith's Point, which people have told me about, but I've never actually gone over there either.
For sure.
What's that?
Sure, right, of course.
Yeah, of course. Well, Andrew, we have other calls, believe it or not.
And happy birthday to Bobby Moriarty, Ann.
Oh, no. Okay, well, thank you. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Why don't you go to Antarctica?
You know, that's a good idea. You know, why don't people live in Antarctica? That's something I've always wondered. They live by the North Pole, but they've never found Eskimos or anything down in Antarctica. Why is that?
Well, I mean, they do have scientists there.
Yeah, they have scientists there, but they, you know, they came there from other places. We didn't just find a whole tribe of scientists.
We'll figure. Okay. I guess they don't have natives down there because there really aren't a lot of... Well, it's totally on the bottom, and there's, like, a lot of water around it. And I guess in order to get, like, to get to America, like, they had to have guys paddling boats, and they had to have people going over ice bridges and stuff like that. And people don't really do that to go to Antarctica because it gets cold and everything like that. And if there aren't any animals, then there isn't any fur. And if there isn't any fur, then they freeze to death.
I suppose they got a point there, but still, they have penguins and things. You know, the penguins somehow get there. And
penguins swim.
You'd be surprised, though, how far north people go. I went to Baffin Island last year, and it's, you know, the land of the midnight sun, where you never see the sun, or just for a few months a year, where it's incredibly cold. I mean, you'd never expect people to want to live in places like that where there are no trees and
There's that sense of adventure that goes to every human being.
Yeah, well, I'm just surprised they never made it down to Antarctica. But yes, that is a place I would like to go to, because you see amazing stars, and you see different stars.
Oh, yeah, well, is the ozone depletion over?
Well, that's the other thing that bothers me. There is tremendous ozone depletion over Antarctica, and I don't think that's getting any better.
Yeah, pretty soon it's going to spread over.
You could probably see more stars because there's less ozone to block it, but I really don't think that would enter into it.
From what I heard, by like 2050, if nothing's done, it could go worldwide.
Yeah.
Well, sobering thought there.
That would be horrible. And you know what else?
What?
We are all contributing to the depletion of the ozone. I heard a program on the Great Atlantic Radio Conspiracy right here on this station that tells how not only the spray cans, but people who use air conditioners in their cars and in their homes are contributing a lot to...
So in other words, my air conditioner right now is depleting the ozone?
Yeah, it's got that Freon or something in it.
Oh, God.
And it just goes up there and messes things up tremendously. And they say commercial freezers too. Those are the things. And it's, you know, I don't have a solution. I don't want to say to everybody, well, you got to live in heat and everything, and turn off your air conditioners. But I would say just don't use them all the time or something.
People are so self-assured of their own immortality.
Uh huh.
I was reading something which said, man has an incredible tendency to think he's the center of the world and to keep on doing it even when he learns that he isn't.
Uh huh. That's true. I mean, we are destroying any chance for life in the future if we keep this up. But I don't know anybody that will agree and say, okay, I'm getting rid of my air conditioner, you know, I'm getting rid of my my spray cans. Although they may not have a choice there.
Okay, here's an interesting thought. I was reading a book called Callahan's Cross Time Saloon.
Uh-huh.
Science fiction book by this guy named Spider Robinson.
Uh-huh.
And it's set on Long Island.
That's nice. What part of Long Island?
Actually, it's generic Long Island because there's a saloon called Callahan's, and it's in, you know, generic town Long Island.
Well, do they have a name for this generic town?
No, they don't. They don't really mention the town that it's in. They do mention Lake Sayville, and they mention going into MacArthur Airport and stuff like that.
Wow.
But what it talks about is there's one part in the book. People come into Callahan's to talk about their different problems, and there's one part in this book where this alien steps in. And he's talking about how back before man even came to the planet, they were there. And what happens is that this race is against violence, but is hungry, and has set up man to be self-destructive, to serve as food. And supposedly the order came down in the past 100 years to start harvesting.
Uh-oh.
And what he talks about how there's been more corruption and more violence and everything in the past 50 years than there has been in the history of man. Well,
I thought that was because of television.
It very possibly is. That's another tangent. If you go off, television really, really desensitizes everyone. I was talking to a friend who was telling me that in a speech class she was in, someone was talking about capital punishment. And he had brought in a video of Faces of Death to show what it's like. And she said that the kids in the class were all cheering it on because, you know, it's this horror movie and, you know, people are dying and stuff like that. And, you know, gee whiz.
Was it fiction or was it nonfiction?
What?
Was it fiction or nonfiction?
It was supposedly nonfiction.
So well, did it show real people dying or did it show actors dying?
Supposedly it was real people.
Well, that's very different then.
And, but these kids don't know the difference between actors dying and real people dying.
Uh-huh.
They don't know the difference between fake death, staged death, and an actual death, and they were cheering it on. And then she said when they went on, when the next kid talked about animal rights, these kids were going, were sympathizing with the animals. But, I mean, man is the only animal I know that will, man is the only animal that will pass laws to help other animals while killing itself.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, we're all nuts, I know. We're crazy. I don't know how we got this far. And I shudder at the thought of the future.
Well, if you think of what Spock says, he talks about how the history of man is a series of lucky breaks.
Uh-huh.
That seems to be the only thing that's saving us now.
The very existence of man, yeah, the whole evolutionary process, that's luck. I'm sure the creationists are going to get on me for that, but it's a lucky break that we happen to just end up here.
That's true. Well,
with that thought, then, thanks for calling. What town are you calling from?
I'm calling from wonderful Mount Sinai.
Mount Sinai. Well, that's just fine, then. And did you hear any Shoreham sirens this week?
What time?
I don't know. Any time during the week. Did you hear a weird siren? Because they were supposed to be testing it for 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And I know 57 of the 89 sirens failed.
So I didn't hear anything.
That's it's pretty incredible. Actually, no, I think it was 57 of the 89, or something like that, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, so they all failed or something. And
we're definitely in a mess.
Yes, unless we do something fast. Thanks very much for calling.
Sure.
Bye. 632-6901, if you have any thoughts, comments, or opinions on anything in particular. It's 10:30. The program is Brain Damage. I'm Eric Corley with you until midnight. And underneath us, or kind of among us right now, is soundtrack to Kawakatsi, terrific film by with the music of Philip Glass and presented by Francis Ford Coppola and George Lucas, but of course a Godfrey Reggio direction, or directed by, you might say. Lots of nice things there. Well, it has been a continuingly strange week, I guess you would say, but what we're seeing is bizarreness to its strangest levels. I don't know how to put this into words, because it's just so incredibly strange. If you happen to look at the newspapers today, this whole Glasnost business is really almost getting out of hand. And one thing that I want to focus on tonight is just what in the world is going on? This is incredible. What is happening here? There's a headline in today's newspaper saying, Soviets rewriting history. Okay, now we may be used to that. That may sound like something that's been going on for years, but listen. They admit their textbooks are wrong, and they cancel final school exams. Now, I feel like I'm living in some kind of fantasy here. I don't understand how this is possible. Let's take a look at the story, which came from the Los Angeles Times. All the final history exams for Soviet school children have been canceled this year because the government has concluded that much of what they were taught was wrong. More than 53 million students are affected by the change. We should be so lucky. Unfortunately, our history hasn't been deemed wrong, so we got to take those finals. Well, the government newspaper Izvestia explained yesterday that the extraordinary decision was intended to end the passing of lies from generation to generation that has served to consolidate the Stalinist political and economic system that the current Soviet leadership is trying to end. I mean, it sounds like something Reagan would have said years ago. The guilt of those who deluded one generation after another, poisoning their minds and souls with lies, is immeasurable, as Vestia said in a strongly worded front-page commentary. Now, if anyone wants to call up and comment on this, I would advise you to do so now, because we are going to be going into Moscow Mailbag, which is becoming almost a feature here on Brain Damage, taken directly from Radio Moscow, in fact, taken directly from tonight's Radio Moscow broadcast, aimed at our North American continent. So give us a call at 632-6901, area code 516, and let the phone ring. As soon as I finish the article, I'll get to the phones, and we'll get to Moscow Mailbag. As Vestia continues, today we are reaping the bitter fruits of our own moral laxity. We are paying for succumbing to conformity and thus to giving silent approval of everything that now brings the blush of shame to our faces and about which we do not know how to answer our children honestly. Don't they talk good? Yeah, it's incredible. The re-examination of Soviet history has gone so far, especially in the last 8 months, that even historians, social scientists, and Communist Party theoreticians are uncertain what was correct, what was fantasy, and what was a cover-up of crimes in the material taught students here. With almost daily disclosures of past errors by a regime that once claimed political infallibility for scientific socialism, canceling the end-of-term examinations was the only way to break the cycle, as Vestia said, praising the decision as sober, honest, and dignified. Perhaps this, as nothing else, testifies to the triumph of new thinking, to the readiness to discard the traditional approaches, the newspaper said. Only yesterday one could not even suppose that such a decision was possible, let alone would be implemented. I think we have to agree there. And one thing I'd like to ask the people who are calling in now, when we get to the calls, why are they doing this? What made them do this? Did we make them do this? Did Reagan make them do this? Is this something that just happens in the natural course of history, a re-examination of the past? What in the world is going on? Well, a decision which officials said was made at the highest levels of the party and government and confirmed after a debate by the party's ruling Politburo stems from the determination of Soviet leader Mikhail S. Gorbachev to accelerate and broaden his reform effort. Gorbachev's supporters believe that knowledge of the truth about the Soviet past, particularly the mistakes, failures, and tragedies of previous policies, can go a long way toward overcoming conservative opposition to the reforms. As Vestia called the process a purifying torture of revelation, or to be more precise, a second birth. These articles have prompted letters to the press from parents who complain that the country's schools, which are governed by one of the least responsive bureaucracies, were failing to keep pace. Anyone opening a newspaper or magazine, they argued, learned just the opposite of what classroom history texts were teaching the nation's children. Izvestia agreed, calling for a crash program over the summer to rewrite the whole history curriculum with contributions from those authors who have written recent historical exposés. I'm just curious what kind of history we'll be seeing. Well, what are they going to come up with over the summer? Well, enough of that. 632-6901, give us a call. What are your thoughts? What are your feelings? Why are they doing this? How could this be happening? Is it good? Is it bad? Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Oh, good. I got through. It's a regular Brain Damage guy.
Well, as opposed to who?
I don't even know if the name of the show is still Brain Damage. I missed you last week, and I'm really depressed about that.
Oh, well, I was here, so I didn't miss it, so I'm okay.
But I was listening. You just came into range when I was getting home. I was coming back from Nassau, and you were talking about... Well, I guess maybe we're going to get off the subject, but I don't know how you got into... How did you get into air conditioners? Because you're in error of what you're saying.
Okay, well, why don't you tell me... We're talking about the Soviets now, but talk about air conditioners for a minute.
Well, every time you turn your air conditioner on, you're not harming the atmosphere whatsoever. Because the freon is contained.
What if it leaks?
Self-contained atmosphere.
What if it leaks?
If it leaks, then. But if it leaks, the air conditioner won't work.
Well, now... I'm under the impression, and I'm not an expert on this, that air conditioners, some air conditioners leak more than others. I believe car air conditioners are the biggest leakers. So if you have a car air conditioner, you are contributing to the ozone depletion.
Couldn't leak. The seals have a tendency to leak a little, but I was in air conditioned refrigeration in the Navy.
Uh-huh.
And I also work in the chemistry department.
Yeah, why is that such a big department in the Navy, air conditioning and refrigeration? I've always wondered about
that.
Well,
I mean, you got all the food on board, number one,
uh-huh.
on a cruise, and then in the superstructure, in the with the electronic warfare and the operations specialists, they all have highly sophisticated, tracking devices, electronic equipment that needs to be kept cool, otherwise uh-huh. it won't operate properly. I'm electronic tech, and, you got to keep this stuff cool. It just doesn't work right.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of other classified reasons that I can't talk about.
Well, okay, we don't want to get into the refrigeration secrets there.
And also, From what I've read and studied, now I could be wrong, I'm not an authority on this, but the ozone layer, we may not be ruining it. It may be a natural occurrence for the ozone to sort of fluctuate. There's debate on that. Our scientific team, as a matter of fact, from Stony Brook University itself had gone down to Antarctica to study that, and they didn't really gather enough data to really get all the evidence that they needed to actually prove it.
Uh-huh. Well, I think...
Well, you know about ionization, what causes an oxygen atom to become ozone. It gets ionized, and that's from the sun's radiation, and then the chlorofluorocarbons are supposed to upset that.
Well, regardless of whether or not it's in part a natural occurrence, I think they proved pretty much that aerosol cans were causing an unacceptable depletion.
Well, I would have to agree that we are messing up the Earth. I've said that many times on your program and on the Ministry of Truth way back in the old days. But that's only because there's too many of us and we don't have any natural predators, so we're going to kill ourselves through overpopulation. I've said that hundreds of times. You're probably sick of hearing that. Could be one of the ways we're doing it.
Well, that's a horrible thought, but... let's hope we can figure out a better way.
Well, plus the deforestation, I guess, you know, a lot of people have, especially older folks, say that the weather's been changing a lot lately. Some people...
Well, the older folks always say that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know whether it's... I'm in my 30s now, but I don't remember the weather being this weird when I was younger. Maybe I'm just older and more alert.
Seems that people are the ones getting weirder. But before we stray too much, do you have any thoughts on all this Soviet jazz that's going on?
Oh, I missed some of it. Can you give me just a quick something then I could say something?
Basically,
I missed so much of it. You were saying something about their old doctrine was no good and they have to...
Basically, it seems like the Soviets are saying just what Reagan was saying a few years ago, that they're teaching lies in their schools. They admitted that their textbooks are completely wrong.
Admitted that.
They've canceled their schools, all their schools, all 53 million students will not be taking finals in history because the history is wrong.
It sounds like propaganda, though.
But that's what the Soviets are saying this time. So what is going on? What are they up to?
Yeah, I know. It seems like they're trying to capitalize. I mean, they're trying to get, like, people say that they're trying to become more and more a capitalist society, but they're trying to do it slowly. But I don't know what to believe because I'm not over there. And some of the Soviets like the way things are over there from what I understand. I watch a lot of public television, you know, so I get a lot of my information from PBS.
Uh-huh.
And you know how some of them want to leave the country, you know, the Jewish or whatever, they want to get out of there. And some of the Soviets feel that, well, they should stay. They shouldn't be allowed out because the Soviets paid for them to go to school and everything else. So I really don't understand what's going on in your program tonight. I'm going to have to listen.
Okay.
I missed out on the earlier part. You just came into range, and I heard the part about the air conditioner, and I started to see red because USB, you know, I mean, every time you turn an air conditioner on, I got upset. I felt like that was giving out false information.
Let's find out the facts. Let's appeal to our listeners to give us the facts, both on air conditioning and the Soviets. I think, you know, the two might be a little closer than they appear. Thanks very much for calling.
Yeah, keep up the good work, Eric.
Well, we'll give it a try.
Yeah, okay, good night.
Thanks, good night. 632-6901, area code 516. If you have any thoughts on the Soviets or on air conditioning or whatever else is in the air tonight, I'll say one thing. It's some consolation that we come in here year after year and sweat like pigs in this room where the temperature gets into the 90s in the middle of the summertime. Now at least we know we're doing it for a purpose. We're not destroying our atmosphere, unless you consider radio waves destroying the atmosphere, and if you consider what goes over the radio waves to be destroying civilization, yeah, I guess you could say we're doing a lot of harm, but if you don't think about that, we might actually be helping to make things safer for your kids and grandkids and puppies and all that kind of thing. But the main thing, the record's over. Well, it's good that the record's over because we're about to go into the tape, and the tape is a tape of tonight's edition of Moscow Mailbag, where you'll hear a continuing openness, something that I don't think liberals or conservatives thought was possible a mere 5 years ago. So we're going to listen to that, and after we do, we'll come back here, and you can call us up. We might have some in-studio guests, and we can talk about this whole issue and how it affects us and where it's going to lead in the future. So right now, Moscow mailbag direct from Moscow, and don't forget to take note of the address that they give at the end, and if you do feel like writing them, make sure you you mention where you heard it. And who knows, you might even get us famous, or at least put us on some federal agency's watch list. Moscow mailbag here on USB.
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. Here's Joe Alamov to answer your questions. Joe Pepper of Saginaw, Michigan says, my wife and I are in the 35% tax bracket based on our annual earnings. Will Soviet citizens now be paying income taxes under perestroika?
You see, Jeff, today the maximum income tax that the average citizen pays is 13%. That's the maximum. 13% of his monthly income. Those in the lowest income bracket pay no income tax. Taxes, generally speaking, play a secondary role in the national budget. They make up something like 8% of all our revenues. You may ask, where then does the government get its money from? The answer is from government-owned economy and business. But you know, something new has come up in our society. Now that we're opening up small, cooperatively owned cafes and restaurants and service shops and what have you, the question arose about the high taxes levied on them when their income exceeds a certain level. When it exceeds that certain level, they can pay up to 90% in taxes. The question became the subject of a heated debate in the media and also in the Supreme Soviet, our parliament. So far, Parliament decided to retain the high taxes on our self-employed businesses and cooperatives. But I personally do not agree with that because I think it stifles initiative, and much of the media, I'm afraid, is of the same opinion as I am.
Our second question comes from John Fulbright of New Haven, Connecticut. He asks, what do people in the Soviet Union think about President Reagan?
You know, I think the feelings are like two sides of a coin. On one side, we know his conservatism, his notorious reference to the Soviet Union as the empire of evil, his stand of trying to deal with us from positions of strength, which he voiced on the very eve of the summit, incidentally, and also right after it in Britain. His constant tendency to preach to the Soviet Union, his stand on not hurrying with a 50% cut in strategic arms, which he again expressed right after the summit, well, that I think is one side of the coin. The other side is a Reagan who realizes that he must face the realities of the present world, that he must get along with the Soviet Union, that dialogue must take the place of confrontation, that ratifying the INF Treaty is a good thing for both sides. The other side of the coin is the Reagan that calls Mr. Gorbachev his friend. Well, those are the two sides of the coin as I see them. Let's hope that whoever is the new president will adopt this latter tendency and continue this latter tendency.
What do your people think about Afghanistan?
We feel that Geneva agreements on Afghanistan have turned a page in the history of Afghanistan from war to peace. The only voice against the agreements comes from the so-called Alliance of Seven. That's the fanatical fundamentalists in Peshawar. They want to try and drown Afghanistan in a bloody civil war. And we feel they will fail to find a solution through war, because the Afghan government has adequate forces. Now, the total number of Soviet forces in Afghanistan on May 15th was about 100,000. In aiding the Afghan government to repulse the intrusion from outside, the Soviet forces lost around 14,000 in killed and 35,000 in wounded. And there are about 300 missing, most of them prisoners of war. We're very concerned about the fact that Pakistan continues to violate the Geneva Agreements, because interference from the territory of Pakistan is increasing from day to day. The Afghan Foreign Ministry has already sent something like 11 notes to the United Nations observers in Kabul. The notes contain information on violations of the Geneva Agreements with concrete facts and concrete details. What all this may lead to, I'm afraid, is that the USSR and Afghanistan will draw the corresponding conclusions concerning the schedule of the Soviet withdrawal. I think Pakistan should keep this in mind. Let's put it bluntly. Do they or don't they want to see us withdraw from that country?
Mr. Fulbright also wants to know, how popular is the theater and ballet?
You know, if it wasn't popular, I mean ballet, we wouldn't have a situation where here in Moscow it's almost impossible to get a ticket to the Bolshoi Theater. But we do see much ballet on television, thank God. Getting a ticket to a good contemporary play on some of the burning problems of the day is also not too easy. Many of our plays today draw your attention to the alarming developments of late years. These plays naturally have triggered very lively discussions. And what with glasnost and perestroika, the companies now choose their own repertory. This for us is unusual, because in the past, the companies received their repertories from the top, from above. The future of our theater will from now on depend on artists and not on bureaucrats. Another new trend is the emergence of new amateur companies. I've seen their billboards on the streets of Moscow. Some are excellent.
Joe, what is your opinion on Central America?
Well, if you want me to put it in a nutshell, it would amount to let each country develop along the path it has chosen, and don't try to overthrow the legal, the sovereign countries by supporting the countries of all hues. If you take the fratricidal war in Nicaragua, it has carried away something like 50,000 lives. We believe that the only road to normalizing the situation is by systematically implementing the Guatemala agreements of the five countries of that region of August the 7th. The Nicaraguan government has shown goodwill and has prolonged the ceasefire for another month. They firmly believe that the fight must be switched from the military to the political role. Managua opened right-wing conservative newspapers and opened the right-wing conservative radio stations. This and many other acts, I think, show that the Sandinista government is truly interested in reconciliation. It's for the other side now to decide which path to take.
Mr. Fulbright's last question reads, is there a yearning for worshiping God in the Soviet Union?
Well, with glasnost there has been more religious freedom, yes, but I wouldn't say there's a yearning, because, after all, the majority of the people are atheists. I will say that some new Orthodox churches have been built in quite a few cities. The same applies to, say, the Evangelical Christian Baptists. New meeting houses have been consecrated in Leningrad, in Almaty, that's down in Central Asia, in Kazakhstan, in Tashkent, that's in Uzbekistan, in Vilnius, in Lithuania, in Rostov-on-the-Don, that's on the Azov Sea, in Kubishev on the Volga, and many other cities. But I will conclude by saying this, despite the concern of some people in the West about the freedom of worship in my country, I assure you today, no believer feels that he is restricted in any way.
Ava Schwartz of Evanston, Illinois writes, why is the USSR preventing its citizens from receiving foreign radio transmissions by jamming them? I am referring to transmissions made by the USA's Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty.
Well, you know that we've stopped jamming official government stations like the Voice of America and the BBC. As for Radio Liberty and Radio Free Europe, these stations are run by the CIA. Whether you believe that or not, but that's a fact. And are nothing but subversive stations whose aim is to subvert and change the existing system. How do we know that they're run by the CIA? A man by the name of Oleg Tumanov defected to the West quite a few years ago. He worked for many years at Radio Liberty, and then got fed up with it all and came back to the Soviet Union and, putting it mildly, spilled the beans.
Suzanne Bilheimer of Orlando, Maine asks, are cats a popular pet in the Soviet Union? You have a breed called the Russian Blue?
Well, I think cats are very popular as pets. As for the Russian Blue, you know, I've asked quite a few people. They didn't seem to have ever heard of such a thing. Because, you know, many things that are called Russian in the West are really not Russian. For instance, the Russians have never heard of the Russian roulette. It's unknown in this country. And no one in this country heard of the fact that the bear is the symbol of Russia. Most people here think it's the birch tree that's the symbol of Russia. You know, people in the condominium I live in have quite a few cats. Among them was a vicious Siamese cat, which the owner got rid of. It was so unmanageable. Besides, there are quite a number of stray cats, which people in our house feed, and which meow right at night. A friend of mine from the States brought his cat over to this country and rode with it in the subway. Of course, the cat was in the cage. Some people asked what the cat was and where it came from, and they found out it came all the way from the States. Someone wanted to buy it.
Walter Schlebaum of Aptos, California has a question. In the U.S., unions have the right to strike for better working conditions, higher wages, and so forth. If Soviet citizens have equal rights, how do they resolve such situations under perestroika?
We have no laws forbidding strikes. But of course, if you look at the events in Armenia, I think they have shown that people do come out in great numbers, in tens and tens of thousands. But this is not the rule. Our trade unions have what are known as grievance committees to safeguard workers' rights. And the management has to abide by the decisions on the committee. Of course, we do have managers who pay little attention to improving labor conditions, who show little concern and solicitude for men at work, and the trade union can remind such people of their duties, and if that does not help, to dismiss them. Yes, to dismiss them. And some company managers and company presidents have been dismissed.
Walter has another question. There are no homeless in the Soviet Union, yet about 20% of the people do not have homes of their own and won't until the year 2000. But they must be living somewhere. Do people accept others into their homes with a sense of charity?
You know, people are never out here to share their homes with anyone. See, since before the war and after the war, with the influx of a lot of people into the cities, two, three, four, and even more families were assigned to a huge apartment with one room per family. Now, the 20% which still do not have homes of their own or apartments of their own have been sharing these apartments for years. Now, in the 12 years remaining until the year 2000, all the people that still do not have homes of their own will get separate apartments and separate homes. Today, we're moving something like 10 million people into new homes every year. That's quite a lot. We've been doing that for years and years.
Darwin Hansen of Rowan, Iowa asks, how many languages does Radio Moscow broadcast in?
Radio Moscow broadcasts in over 60 foreign languages, and we began way back in 1929.
This has been Joe Adamov answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Address your letters to Radio Moscow, Moscow, USSR. You couldn't do better than write us that letter. Your comments on this show are always welcome. Mailbag is on the air every Saturday, Sunday, and Wednesday on the East Coast at 2310 and 110 UTC, and on the West Coast at 0410 and 0610 UTC in the 19, 25, 31, and 41 meter bands.
And now here's the news in brief. Avenger goes to all people by nuclear war dictates a need to safeguard the temple of the general human cooperation, regardless of religious, political, or other differences. This point was made by Soviet President Andrei Gromyko as he was receiving in the Kremlin on Saturday a large group of participants in the festivities timed for the millennium of the adoption of Christianity in Russia. The worldwide anti-war action peace wave started off in Japan on June 9th and has rolled across the Soviet Union, including Moscow. The Soviet Foreign Minister Eduard Shevardnadze has warned the Soviet Union will have to review the timetable of withdrawing its troops from Afghanistan if Pakistan continues to violate the Geneva Agreements. Saturday the 11th was the International Day of Action for the release of all of South Africa's political prisoners. In Amsterdam, about 50,000 people demonstrated in solidarity with the jailed African National Congress leader Nelson Mandela and other prisoners of the apartheid regime. A leader of the Sandinista National Liberation Front has said that Nicaragua will continue to search for ways of achieving a peace settlement in Central America and putting an end to aggression against it.
Yes, the news in brief from Radio Moscow here on WUSB Stony Brook. And if you have any comments on what you just heard, please give us a call now, 632-6901, area code 516-632-6901. And then, of course, from the soundtrack to Polakotsi, which we're still playing. Yes, now we're on side one. We were on side two before. That was Sura Pelada, the opening to the film. It's quite a dramatic piece as you see all the things that are going on as it plays. Well, we have just heard the Moscow mailbag from Radio Moscow, tonight's edition, which I thought was rather interesting, humorous in parts and revealing in others. If you have any insights or questions, give us a call. If you need the address again to Moscow Mailbag, it's quite simple, actually. It's Moscow Mailbag, care of Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. No zip code, no nothing. Our number is...
I think I can supply...
You got more? Well, let me introduce
this
you first.
From Moscow is usually 121200.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
121200?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
That's like central Moscow. So that's probably where... And probably Smolensk.
Well, as you can probably tell, there's another person in the studio now. This is Joe Evangelista is here.
Hello.
Hi. He will be giving his insights. But first, let me give out the phone number. It's 632-6901, area code 516, 632-6901. And you know, folks, if you don't call, you're just simply supporting what people in the Soviet Union and in other parts of the world say about us, mainly that we don't care. And that we just care about our own petty needs, and we don't want to talk about anything outside our day-to-day lives. And, I mean, I know that's not true, so I expect to see those lines light up real quickly. 632-6901, area code 516. I mean, there has to be something wrong with the phones, you know? I mean, ever since we got these new phones, we haven't been getting as many calls, and I think it's because the electronic circuitry just can't handle it somehow.
They're all dialing 2467901.
No, don't dial that. You'll get a nasty recording. In fact, let's hear that nasty recording because it's kind of funny. Here we go.
You have dialed has been changed. Please call the new main number for the State University at Stony Brook at 516-689-6000. The telephone number for the University Hospital is 689-8333. For emergencies, call the University Public Safety number at 246-3333.
That guy should be on radio. Anyway,
the number dialed.
Yeah, here. Okay. The phone they're still not lighting up. What's wrong with Americans? What's wrong with us?
Oh, nothing. They just want to hear what we have to say first.
Well, we've said it.
Now, that's the American way.
Well, yes, but still, you know, we say more when people respond and talk back and forth. This is kind of a forum type thing here. 632-6901. Get those phones ringing. 516 area code. About 60,000 people participated today in a Central Park march and rally for nuclear disarmament that brought together 200 peace, labor, religious, and human rights organizations. Police say the event was the city's largest political demonstration since 1982. The activities capped a week of activities in support of the third United Nations special session on disarmament. The coalition organizing the event is seeking to increase interest in abolishing nuclear weapons by the year 2000. Peter Yarrow of the folk singing group Peter, Paul, and Mary participated in the rally. Along the roads winding through Central Park were booths set up by organizations that distributed literature, sold buttons, T-shirts, and records. The Disarmament Coalition endorses the abolition of nuclear weapons, self-determination for all nations, an end to military intervention, and a shift from military buildups to global economic development. Police officials say the crowd was the largest at a demonstration in the city since 250,000 people attended the United Nations second special session on disarmament in 1982. Well, that's kind of deceiving there because they didn't actually attend the special session. Can you imagine cramming 250,000 people into the United Nations? That wasn't the way it was. They were kind of in the streets and everything. I know because I was there. That was a fun day. The day's events began with a torch lighting ceremony at the United Nations. The torch came from the eternal flame at the Hiroshima Memorial in Japan. The program in Central Park featured, among others, Coretta Scott King, folk singers Ronnie Gilbert, Pete Seeger, Yarrow, and an Australian rock group called Midnight Oil. So, hey, any of our listeners there? Tell us if you were there. Tell us how it was. Was that an accurate description? Again, our phone number is 632-6901. And, there. Okay. If the phone was broken, I fixed it. It's got to be working now. The phone is working, right? Do we have a dial tone? Yes. So there's no reason why we shouldn't be seeing all these lights light up. 632-6901. Now, Joe.
Yes.
What are your opinions on the article we read earlier about these...
Yes, the Soviets rewriting history.
Rewriting history and saying that they were wrong all this time.
Oh, well, my initial
reaction... In effect, agreeing with things that you say.
Yeah, absolutely, but let's look at it in light of their... every regime that comes into the Soviet Union has the habit of denouncing the former regime in order to add more legitimacy to the crimes they plan to commit against the Russian people. So in this regime, I mean, Stalin was denounced by Khrushchev, was denounced by Brezhnev, was denounced by the next five people who all didn't last too long in office. So what they're doing now, like I mentioned to you off mic, it's like like when Vaseline found a new way, or when Cheese Bro Pond found a new way to market Vaseline, the Soviets are now taking a new tack in marketing their particular brand. Of philosophy, shall we say, in that now they've found a new way to appeal, a new way to sort of worm into our consciousness by saying we're becoming more like you.
All right, but where could that lead? I mean, they're agreeing with us. They agree
yes.
with us on almost everything. They're saying, well, we have to be more open, more free. We have to allow this and that. And it sounds like, you know, they didn't even have McDonald's and Pizza Hut over there now. What's going on? I'm mystified. I'm baffled.
Well, okay, what's going on is apparently, hey, this is an interesting thing. But what's going on is what had to go on eventually. I mean, it was probably not unknown, though most likely ignored by some of the obviously very intelligent people that were at the founding of this corrupt state, that the system they began, which is actually a system of circular thievery, would eventually itself collapse. And what Gorbachev realizes is that he's got to instill some vitality into the people, because for 70 years now the regular population has existed on nothing more than government largesse. I mean, they work maybe 2 hours a day at the most, and very slowly. You know, there's a Russian joke, and this is actually a Soviet joke.
I heard there was one.
There are many, and most of them run like this one. This was told to me by my Russian teacher. She says, and I'll do it without the phony Russian accent. She says, an American worker defects to the Soviet Union, and, you know, he's just a regular worker, so they give him a job in a factory. And he goes to work the first day and looks at the other workers around him. And, a few hours go by, and finally he says to his fellow workers in this part of the factory, look, I realize you all must be on strike, but I'm sorry, I have to work and feed my family. And so that's a Soviet joke. And, you know, that's basically, Gorbachev... and similarly, this is a problem he's facing. He's getting a lot of resistance within the country.
I don't want to cut you off, but we have a call, and before the caller gets discouraged and hangs up...
Oh, they don't get discouraged.
No, but they do, though. These callers get so discouraged so quickly. But we can continue with this, with the caller. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
It's only me again. I won't get discouraged.
Okay.
Hi, who are you?
He called earlier.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear your call earlier.
I'm a big fan of Eric.
Oh, great. So am I, actually.
Well, do you have any thoughts on what we're discussing?
Yeah, well, you're going to hate me for this question. You're going to shoot me.
Are we both
going to
hate you?
Yeah. Are we both going to shoot you? That would be difficult for both of us to hate you and shoot you. I mean...
We'd have to all get out and get guns, which is, I guess, a Saturday night.
Not only that, I don't know what his position could be, that you and I would hate him both.
Well, I know where he is. He's in Mount Sinai.
Well, here goes. I would like to say, why are we so preoccupied with the Soviet Union anyway?
Oh, that's actually a good question. The reason being is that they exist, and they have a philosophy totally not just a philosophy, practice. What they do is totally against what we do. They're basically the enemy.
Yeah.
And so in that way, that's why we're preoccupied. We like to study them. A lot of people are also, you know, fascinated by something new and strange and foreign, and that's, they're as foreign as you could get because they're so, they've kept to themselves for 70 years.
Now, if I can also answer that question, I think we are obsessed, well, you know, not obsessed maybe, but certainly interested in the Soviet Union because, yes, as Joe says, they are the enemy, quote unquote, but also because we have to deal with the Soviets. They can destroy us, we can destroy them, mm-hmm. and we have to reach some kind of an agreement, and we certainly have to pay attention to the other side.
Mm-hmm. Chinese, though.
Excuse me?
Spoken to Chinese.
Well, that's something that mystifies me. Yes, mm-hmm. the Chinese used to be considered one of the superpowers, and no one's been talking about them recently.
Well, here's the thing about the Chinese is that their superpower thing was good press. See, they were totally closed, and they could pretend that they had all this power, and actually all they had was a lot of people.
You don't think they have nuclear weapons and things?
You should see some of the military equipment. I mean, this is no joke, okay? The military equipment offered for sale and used and built in China is made, like, they offer trailers. It's made from old chassis of, like, 57 Buicks. I'm not kidding. You can get these things with, like, white wall tires. I mean, a friend of mine was telling me about this catalog he read of military equipment produced in China by the Chinese. It's made from all surplus consumer products. So you've got car chassis being turned into so-called weapons carriers. I mean, they have very low technology. What the Chinese were famous for doing in fights with the Soviets is, as soldiers would get shot, a soldier who didn't have a weapon, because he would have to run out to the dead guy, grab his weapon, and run back in the trench and start shooting.
No.
Because they weren't as powerful as we were led to believe. And we were just led to believe by, you know, ignorance. We didn't know, so we assumed they were really powerful. But they have always been a country kind of on the poor side.
Yeah, yeah. But some of that stuff on the tape, I couldn't believe. But, of course, I don't really have enough knowledge.
What couldn't you believe? Give us some examples.
Well, he was saying with the Radio Free is influenced by, if I understood this correctly, by the CIA.
What they said was Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty are both run by the CIA.
Oh, wait
but
a second.
What was incredible was they admitted to jamming, which I don't recall ever hearing them do before. They would always say, oh, it's not us, you know, it's like some atmospheric condition that just mm-hmm. somehow selectively blots out anything aimed to the Soviet Union from the United States. They don't say that anymore. They don't say ridiculous things like that anymore, but they do say we're blocking it because this, you know,
that
whether that's true or not.
Because we're feeding, because, yeah, first of all, I'd like to disagree. I don't think those organizations are run by the CIA. I've known people having a lot to do with Radio Liberty, and I don't think that it's run by the CIA. I know, of course, any such organization would have to work with the CIA, but I think run by is a rather strong way to put it.
Well, if you're
talking about what Radio Moscow has to say, remember, it's always to be taken with a wry smile and a grain of salt.
I've listened to the Voice of America, which is what comes out of Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty come out of Europe, but
yeah.
I believe they're also, like the Voice of America, run by the United States Information
yes.
Agency. Now, what its connections are to the CIA, I don't know.
No one knows.
But
they
broadcast in foreign languages, so I have mm-hmm. no idea what they're even saying over there.
They broadcast right in the native languages, and that's the good way to reach people. In fact, a number of escapees from the communist countries have said that they derived great inspiration and great hope, actually, from the broadcast of Radio Liberty and Radio Free Europe.
Now, what you may have noticed, what a lot of people may have just taken for granted, was the fact that the broadcast we just heard from Moscow was speaking in perfect English.
Yeah, who was that guy?
That was, what was his name again? I forget his name, but he's pretty famous as far as doing that program.
When there's no more borders and no more Iron Curtain, then I'll believe all of the stuff that he says.
Yeah, and, you know, that... Well, actually, you know, that may happen. That may actually be possible.
Oh, I'd love
you
to
think
see
so?
The Iron Curtain
yeah.
come down. I think everybody would
but
like that.
That'll only happen after there's a big revolution in the Soviet Union, which can happen. See, this new marketing campaign that I'm talking about. I mean, it's necessary to bring some, you know, economy in there to do something for the people, do something for the country, because it was bankrupting.
Big Mac.
They would go bankrupt if the Iron Curtain came down, because we wouldn't have any more factories making weapons.
No.
Big trouble.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, it's like when people over there really realize the benefits that are offered by our way of doing things, our philosophy, you know, there could actually be trouble. I mean, if we actually win our hearts and minds, as it were, as the cliche goes.
We have to find a new enemy, though, otherwise we will go out of business.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, has there ever been a time when we didn't have an enemy of some sort?
I mean, there are always, you know, human enemies. There are always problems, hunger and starvation. And then if there were ever a united Earth, I mean, there would be the opportunity to expand outward. I mean, with the wealth of the Earth.
I don't know about that, because then you'll get me, man. Because we can't help everybody. That's the trouble. We're too compassionate.
Yeah, he said earlier that there's too many people in the world now, and there's no natural predators.
Yeah.
Oh, are you kidding? Man is his own natural predator. He's the best animal on earth.
Not to the extent of the animal kingdom. No way.
Oh, well.
If we all start loving each other, then what are we going to do then, you know?
Well, we'll never love everybody. I mean, God, there are so many sick birds out there.
What we need is some kind of alien from outer space, and then we can unite against another enemy and keep fighting wars and be happy, you know?
Yeah,
oh,
but
God.
They don't want to stop here. They're too busy far away. We don't want to get into that, though.
Well, if we keep sending nuclear waste out their way, I'm sure they'll pass a visit sooner or later.
Yeah, really.
Okay, well, let's give another caller a chance. I had my fun.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling.
Hey, good night, guys.
Night.
I'm listening.
632-6901, area code 516. What was I going to say?
We were going on about the Soviet Union's new face. I want to point out, it seems to me, now, regarding that, when you regard the Soviet Union, one must regard the entire East Bloc, because they're not separate countries. They're all part of the Soviet Union, even though they have nominal governments. They're all answerable to Moscow. They're all slaves to the Soviet whip, basically. And like a city, we've got to remember, it's like a city that refurbishes the buildings and rebuilds the streets. Only those streets and buildings that are going to be the subject or crossed by, let's say, an international delegation. That's what the Soviet Union is like. Everybody's focusing on Moscow. Nobody's looking at look at the Ukraine. The Ukrainian church is still persecuted. Look at East Germany. I mean, the whole East Bloc is no better off than it was before. There are still Russian tanks sitting outside Prague, sitting in Hungary. There are still Russian suppression. Look at Solidarity, right? It's outlawed and suppressed completely. Those people don't have any more freedom than they ever had. And so it's like the East Bloc. I mean, the East Bloc is going to be the real indicator of any change in the Soviet Union. That is going to be the meter. Otherwise, it's just sham and show. All you have right now are government organs doing what the government says, just like you did before. Now the government says, criticize us. So you're allowed to criticize us.
Huh?
When they say you've gone too far, they stop. When you see some true autonomy, when you see free border crossings, when you see the Berlin Wall go down, when you see some real change within the East Bloc countries, especially the ones that could easily become good, productive Western nations like they once were, then one can actually talk about reform in the Soviet Union.
632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, I was just wondering, with all these changes that Gorbachev is making threatening the power of the bureaucrats, I wonder if he's going to be able to stay in power.
That's a good question. You see, I think it's nothing that we can answer here. I really hope he does stay in power, because he is the best thing that's happened to them, for them and for us. I mean, no, let's not kid each other. He's doing the best he can for his country, and he's certainly not to be trusted, but he's going to do better for them than somebody who sticks to the old party line.
Do you think he's got some kind of trick up his sleeve, though?
Well, who knows if it's just him? I mean, he could be just a figurehead, you know.
Oh, I doubt it. I mean, he's getting a lot of resistance. He has a lot of enemies, and there's a
whole... How could it be just Gorbachev on his own?
Okay.
And how could he get into power by himself?
It can't be him on his own, but, you know, the way things seem to work in the Soviet government is kind of analogous to the way the politicking that goes on in America, although the deals there are more concrete and the benefits are a lot greater, because of course the wealth and everything is a lot more centralized. All the wealth is in the government. So he could have very well made a deal with one or two very powerful and very much younger people who aren't, you know, part of the old line, people who aren't the 60, you know, the 60, 70 year old guys. So it's very possible that he has some allies for whom he is going to take all the heat, but who will supply him with some form of protection. I don't doubt that there have been attempts on his life that we have never heard about and will never even know about.
I'm sure there are, because he's limiting the terms that used to be unlimited of government officials.
Oh, yeah.
And they threatened the chance of, if they don't give in to Glasnost, their terms of office could be canceled.
And also elections where more than one person is running for an office. And that's totally bewildered people who live there. They say, well, what's, I don't understand. What's the point? And it's really, they don't understand the whole concept of election with more than one person running.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they all understand what perestroika is, because I was in Russia recently. And I was in a palace of youth, and I asked one of the students, has Glasnost affected you yet? And she didn't know what it was.
Really? What part of the Soviet Union were you in?
I was in Moscow and Leningrad.
Yeah, there were only like three places in the Soviet Union where Westerners are allowed to go.
Well, now, you could take the Siberian Express from China.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
No, you can, but I wouldn't call that like being a place. Like, you're really allowed to be in Moscow, Leningrad.
Yeah, you're in a train. You can look outside and see things.
Oh, you can look outside, but it's like, who are you with? I mean, whom are you surrounded by? Who are you surrounded by? You know, and I mean, you can see things with your eyes, but you can't make any conclusion from a countryside, from the sights on a countryside. You can take beautiful pictures from the Trans-Siberian Railroad, but the people, you see, the problem with even being a student, even going on the street, the problem with that society is that there's always, I mean, everybody knows where you are at any given time, and they know to whom you're speaking at any given time.
Now,
pretty much.
Not exactly. Well, I didn't find that when I...
Well, it's something a normal person couldn't be aware of because of the degree of sophistication with which you're being.
But with the summit 2 weeks ago, I was listening to reporters and reading things in the paper, and people who had been there before for a previous summit said this is very different. They aren't watching you every moment, and you are allowed to go places unsupervised. And I would imagine that would be true. I don't think they're really being watched.
You are allowed. If after you break off from your tour group, you really have the liberty. I roamed the streets of Leningrad on my own with my friends, and I saw as much as I, you know, could see, and I could draw my own conclusions from that.
And one thing that I think is very interesting is the people there are so hungry for information from us and for technology and the newest records and everything like that, and that seems natural to me.
I met someone on the street, and they said, "Oh, the Soviet Union, it's a great country," and I said. And he said, and the United States is a great country, too. No, he said, the United States is a great country, and the Soviet Union is a great country, too. The only problem is leaving.
Yeah.
What were your impressions of Leningrad and Soviet life, from the people you met and what you saw?
Soviet life?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's very repressive. I mean, there's just so far that you could go because everything is so determined by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone I talked to, not everyone, but a great deal of people that I talked to, just seemed to want to leave. Just wanted to get away, find some kind of freedom where they could do what they wanted.
Get away from you, or get away, I mean, get out of the conversation?
Get away from,
you know, did everyone, like, want to, like, leave after talking to you for only a few minutes?
No, they wanted, they know, they all have these, you know, impressions of what America would be like, great freedom and do whatever you want. Not all, but I mean, a great deal of people that you meet on the streets, they wanted to defect.
I guess you must speak Russian pretty well then, huh?
No, I was at the class, I'm just learning it.
Most of the people spoke English?
The people who I spoke to, they would speak English.
That's incredible. You know, and there's something else I noticed.
Did they speak good English? Pardon me.
Well, lots of times. I met one girl who specifically was studying English so that she could defect and manage well. I mean, she had planned this.
During the summit, they showed quite a few Soviet citizens on television speaking English, and it was amusing because one of them he sounded like a hick. He was talking with a Midwestern accent. I'm not saying Midwestern people are hicks, but you know, he had kind of like a country accent, and he was saying things like y'all and stuff like that.
Exactly, and that's scary because it almost seems like propaganda. Like, who's the journalist that they're using for the new propaganda man? Do you know what his name is?
Not Posner, the younger guy.
Vladimir Posner.
Posner, he's the older guy. There are two of them.
He's been around for years, and he speaks very good English.
Well, he's an American.
Who's Posner?
He's an American. He's a New Yorker.
I know, and...
he's a defector.
It's apparent, and I guess I'm a little skeptic, because everything seems to be a little too good to be true. The way they're all agreeing with what we're saying. And
yeah, that's
not
what
only
gets
that,
me, too.
Listen, the level of... the level of...
English-speaking people who speak it well is supposedly not very high. If you met a lot of people who speak pretty good English, I mean, I wouldn't say that, the people you met were structured, but it's like maybe your travels weren't restricted. I mean, I don't know, but it might be that only that you were allowed to meet certain people, which your meeting them was controlled from the other side.
I don't think so, because if they were controlled, I'm sure they wouldn't want me to meet a girl who wanted to defect.
Yeah, but you know how, I mean, it's possible that, I mean, it's hard to believe that somebody living in a police state would come up to a total stranger and say, I'm studying English so I can defect,
yeah,
not knowing whether you're from the police.
Yeah, that's what it's like.
But that's a pretty strange thing. I mean, don't you think, because...
What would be the point of sending somebody to fool somebody from America? I mean, what would they be gaining?
Exactly. I mean, when you first get there, you expect to be bugs in the hotel, and you're saying, well, who the hell am I? I'm only a student. They're not going to bug the hotel because I don't have any importance. You go around the streets, there's black market everywhere, right out in the open. And you figure there's police around. Don't they ever catch them? Then you think again, well, the police have to get stuff from the black market, too, because that's the only place where you get good stuff.
Uh-huh. Like the cops in... like a popular belief among us when we were kids were that a cops in Nassau County got a lot of stuff confiscating this. Like picking through the confiscated goods, you know, from when they'd arrest people. So, you know, I mean, that was just, of course, silly. But, I mean, you know, I would guess the police in Moscow get a lot of stuff, like divvying up confiscated goods.
No, I'm saying that the black market is so widely used because that's the only way you can find quality goods. You know?
I'd like somebody to go, let's say a couple of months from now, I mean, when there's no summit and no great media attention and things are cooled down, to go there and try this and see who they meet and see who they talk to. I mean, because right now there's a big push, you know. When were you there, may I ask?
I was there last month.
Okay. There's like a big media push, you know. They don't know... So maybe they send out people to meet reporters and stuff.
I don't think so. I mean, I really don't. I met very innocent, you know, young people, and they're just like us. They just want to get by.
Yeah, but remember this.
Plus, Joe, you're assuming that they're very well organized in order to do that.
Well, listen, remember this.
I don't think they have the organization or the technology to do such a thing.
Organization and technology are unrelated.
Well, what exactly are you saying? That they send out spies to...
Not spies, that they send out people to convey certain information, to say certain things, you know.
To create an impression?
To create an impression. I mean, remember, what they did, it was even reported in the Times a couple of weeks ago, in preparation for the summit, the streets that were going to be traveled by the president were repaved and the buildings were refaced. Now, only...
That's so typical, though.
Right, but these improvements haven't been made. I mean, they were talking about, like, potholes and street destruction and decrepitation of buildings that has been going on for 30 or 40 years.
I can't think of a single country that wouldn't repave a street where a summit is going to be passing. I mean, that's not a Soviet thing. That's just a human thing.
We all get a little too skeptic. When we hear the word Soviet, we all take the opposite, you know, a little too extreme against them.
Actually, I think we've been in love with the Soviets. We've been
recently, and that's scary, especially with... But figures as posing, it makes them seem, I don't know.
I know, it makes them seem lovable. It makes them seem like us. Hey, but remember...
Oh, like us, they are human beings.
I don't mean like us in a biological sense, or even in a sense of wanting to be free. I mean, like us in a sense that...
We all have the same needs.
Yes, but not so much... We're not talking that we all have the same needs. We're talking like life there is just like life here, and it has the same effect on people, and they have...
Yeah,
that's
the scary thing, because it certainly is a far cry from life here.
Really? I mean, I'd like to see somebody... All right, let's say in Kiev, maybe in another city, maybe somebody in Vladivostok throw paint on a statue of some revered leader. Well, there are many, and see what they do. You know.
Well, of course they're going to take action against that.
You know, but
I mean, why would you object to them taking action against their
own
people?
Well, you very well might see that with some of the ethnic rioting that's going on over there too.
I mean, that's a good thing to see. I mean, all these poor people are taking this opportunity. And it's a welcome
it
to protest
good.
And let
it
everyone know.
It could be good, but
right.
it could also be the undoing of this. I mean, look what happened with Solidarity. That got a little bit out of control, and the tanks came in.
And the key word is control. The key word is control.
If this gets out of control, it could be the end of it, too.
But remember, the people in Eastern Europe, well, if you want to mention that for a second, the people in Eastern Europe have a...
have a much more recent history. The people still alive and still in position to do something and make opinion remember freedom. So when you give them a little freedom, it's not like giving the Soviet Union, because the Soviet people...
Wait, are you talking about Poland, or...?
Well, Poland, East Germany, Czechoslovakia, all those people remember what it's like to be free, because it's only been the last 40 years.
I was in Poland also a couple of years ago.
Pardon me?
I was in Poland also a couple of years ago.
Ah. Yeah, I have...
Was that during Solidarity, or after Solidarity?
After martial law was lifted.
Okay. And how did you find things there? Was it depressing, or...?
Parts of it was.
Uh-huh.
What people have to put up with, but I mean, you find good things everywhere.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, some of the cities were just beautiful. But I have to say one thing about the Eastern Bloc countries and the Soviet Union. They remember World War II with much more clarity than we do.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, there's a reason for that. Is that it was the end of freedom for them.
Well, no, it was fought on their soil, too.
Because they suffered more than any other country.
Pardon me?
I mean, being to the Soviet Union and Poland, it kind of brought... It made me think more about the losses in the Second World War.
That made you think more than you had previously?
Because, I mean, it's the Second World War is so overshadowed by, you know, Vietnam.
Oh, you mean in this country? Well, that's just popular. I mean, that's just a popular effect. I mean, yeah, you remember the most recent war, and for us, the most recent war is Vietnam. For them, the most recent, well, for the Czechs, of course, the most recent war happened in 1968, but I mean...
But Joe, all of our wars that we've been involved in this century have been away games, you know?
No, we've never been attacked.
Yeah, of course, not since the war of, I guess, 1812, and then that was in the sea. I mean, we haven't really fought, New Orleans, the Battle of New Orleans, but since, I mean, we have really not fought on American soil.
A couple of riots, but that doesn't really count.
No, those aren't wars, those are skirmishes.
Public
skirmishes, but,
Well, I want to thank the caller. We are getting
really,
some
I want
calls.
To thank you for calling. You sound pretty neat. Stop by the station sometime.
What?
Stop by the station sometime.
Oh, sure.
Beyond brain damage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
So long.
632-6901 is our phone number. Good evening. You're on brain damage.
Hello. Do I have brain damage?
Yes, you do.
Oh, how you doing tonight?
How you doing? Your voice sounds awfully familiar.
It sounds like he's got reverb, too.
It sounds like he's in a tunnel. What's
up? No, I'm in a 10-foot by 10-foot cube.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he's in the Soviet Union.
No. Okay.
Not particularly, but, you know.
Wait a minute.
Still talking about the Soviet Union, is that correct?
Yes, but hold on. Am I correct in surmising the situation that perhaps we shouldn't be talking about on the air?
Talking about what?
But something that you need that I can give you?
Yes, definitely, but
okay.
That's not the... Well, it is the reason I called, but you see, I already have a cover for that.
You do?
Yes.
Because have you already attempted to get that and failed?
Yes, I've already attempted that and failed.
Ah, okay, well then I can fix that.
That's good, but I was I had an interesting thought. I was listening to the... I had brain damage on the way over, you might say, and I was wondering, if you lived in Russia all your life, how could you possibly trust the person that you marry?
That's a very good point.
Think about it. I mean, these people, they're coming from an entire different family. Who the heck knows what their family history is? There's probably no way to even find out that type of information, like a family tree type of thing. And you're actually going on a hunch, for the most part.
It's just like anywhere else. You fall in love and you get married. It's just like anywhere else. I mean, I know people that Soviets that have gotten married and have since come here, and it's just you meet somebody, you find similar ideals. I mean, yeah.
But I think I know what the caller is getting at. What you were saying before was that there are people out there sent out to give a certain
uh-huh.
image. Now, how do you know that the person you meet, unless you know them all your life,
uh-huh.
isn't one
then?
Of those people?
You don't. You can't worry about that. You can't. I mean, that's something that you have no control over. You just have to worry about how you feel about them, and as you get to know them,
it's an interesting comparison from the Russian society compared to the American society. Is that is one of the elements that you might want to consider at least when you're getting married there, when it's not really the kind of thing that people would even think about here.
Well, now think about this: if you meet some girl in New York. I mean, you maybe not have to worry that she's a Soviet spy, but you have to worry she's a lunatic. I mean, if she meets a guy
on Long Island.
If she meets a guy, is this guy a total dope? I mean, is he a fiend? I mean, what's the matter with him? Was he sick? He lives in New York. I mean, so it's just you don't really worry about those. You just check somebody.
I thought it was
out
just me. I thought it was just me.
No way. I meet somebody. I think, oh geez, what's the matter with this person?
Well, I'm glad everyone feels that way because I was really wondering.
It's a normal thing. It's a normal thing.
Can I just add something in here? Why do you say New York City? What is why is the lunatic factor any less out here on Long Island?
It is less out here on Long Island, believe me.
Well, you see, New York City is more accelerated.
Well,
know?
The thing is that the only reason why there are more lunatics in New York City is because there's more people there. So I would
say,
ratio-wise, though, it's got to be the same.
Well, I don't know. I'd hear the lunatics have BMWs and Volvos and do things like drive the hardware store out of Setauket in order to make it more fashionable. The lunatics here shop at Laura Ashley and Crabtree and Evelyn, and you know don't fix things and just throw them out instead. I mean,
now, even if you had the same number of people in New York as you do here, they would still be more compressed. And when you compress people, when you compress rats, they tend to move at a faster pace and get on each other's nerves a whole lot more.
That's true. Plus, there's also that overload of sensory input that you get in New York City. I mean, after a while, you're just to dull your senses overall.
Uh-huh.
Do you not agree?
Well, I don't think so.
I don't think living in New York dulls my senses. I think it actually heightens them, especially my sense of where I am at any given time.
You live in New York currently?
Yeah. Well,
And have you been there a while?
Yeah, a couple of years now.
I know of a couple of people who live on Long Island who used to live in New York City, mm-hmm. and they said that after a while they just feel that they have to leave just to get away from it all, you know?
Uh-huh. Well, I'm sure I'd feel the same way.
Oh, yeah, it's tiring. It's tiring, but that doesn't mean you become less aware. You just have to deal with it.
Now, I've known people who have lived in the city, and I would say Brooklyn is a city. I mean, I would consider it that way. And they go in there nice and liberal and everything, and then they leave and they're like Bernie Goetz. You know, they
Oh, great. You mean they become good citizens?
They
become people who you can look up to?
Well, you know, I think you know the way I'm presenting this.
Yes.
They become very, I don't know what the word is, but I don't know if vengeful is the correct word, but they seem to think a lot of people are out to get them when, in fact, a few years ago they wouldn't have thought that.
Well, I don't know.
And then they extend that situation to apply to places where it doesn't apply at all.
Anybody that's bought 3 used cars could easily get the impression that everybody's out to get them.
That's true, too.
Yeah, well, you know, for me, all I can say, I used to live in New York City, but I was born in Manhattan, and I moved out at the age of 5, and I've been living on Long Island ever since. But at this point right now, all I do is visit there, and I find that, from a visitor's standpoint, that I feel more comfortable sometimes in New York City with the people and the way they behave than I do on Long Island. I mean, I'm, you know, very worried and very concerned about the people on Long Island. There are a lot of, I don't know what the word is. I'm not going to say sickies or weirdos or anything like that. But there are a lot of people who generally do not have a concern for themselves or anybody else, or so it appears that way.
You know, I think I am in full agreement with this person because I spend a lot of time in the city. I go in there at least twice a week now, something that I never would have done a couple of years ago, and I'm amazed at how easy it is to do. And I can walk around the streets and feel comfortable with the people there because I feel sort of like we're all in it together.
Yes.
But when I get on the train to come back here, I'm usually with a crowded bunch of drunk people that have just come out of a heavy metal concert, and they're all racist and loud and obnoxious, and you know, they just don't care about anything. They make fun of the homeless people in Penn Station, and I think that, you know, I hope that doesn't characterize Long Islanders, but it
pretty much does.
It seems that way when you see them in that environment.
Mean, racist, and insensitive. Yeah, that's Long Island.
Whereas New York is more of a mix of different kinds of people, and they're all kind of living side by side.
In New York, the racism and meanness and a lot of other stuff is saved for parties.
Uh-huh.
Well, saved for alcohol, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, I really would love to talk and continue on this conversation, and perhaps, just perhaps, I may sound a lot closer in the next few moments if you or one of you can give me what I need.
Okay, well, we will certainly try to accomplish that, but we need the help of our listeners. Our listeners can give this mystery caller what he needs by calling us at 632-6901, area code 516.
I'll be listening, and just remember, it's not something that I want, it's something that I need, and we all need it sometimes.
Okay, we got you.
And thank you very much for your time, and I'd like to say good evening to everyone on Long Island.
Okay, well, I hope the
good
signal
evening.
Extends to everyone on Long Island. Thanks.
Absolutely. Who knows? I may be saying good morning soon. Who knows?
Who knows? Oh, isn't this a mystery? Don't you just love mysteries? Well, our number is 632-6901, and
we have another caller.
Okay.
Let's have it.
I'm going to let you field this call.
You're going to let me field it?
Yes. So.
Okay.
Don't get into a nasty argument with these people.
I promise I won't.
Here we go.
Because I don't exactly know what I'll talk about.
Say good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Good evening, you're on Brain Damage, and speak.
Hello? I'm so glad you're the one that answered it. Just like to say that you're one of the great vocal masturbators of the age. You like to listen to yourself talk.
Oh, come on. I wanted to hear this guy talk about vocal masturbation. This guy was just dying to say those two words together.
I don't know if we can say those words before midnight. If the caller wants to call back and maybe be a little nicer with the choice of words.
Fine.
All right, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I was
that's
wrong.
A fine word to use on the air.
Let's go to the next caller. That caller is welcome to call back. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. Now, see, this is better.
Is that data?
Now, you see, we can say that for some reason. I don't understand why. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Really?
So 11:46, and the program is Brain Damage, and...
You want me to get that,
you want to
attend to that? Yeah.
Yeah, I want to attend to that matter that person
okay.
needs. Our number is 632-6901, area code 516. And, we are taking your calls here. That's why we give out the phone number so often. It's, it's called Brain Damage. Eric Corley with you. And, we're here until midnight. Joe Evangelista is our guest tonight, talking about the Soviet Union and changes that have taken place and what they mean. If they're real, and living in New York City, air conditioners, all that kind of thing. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, this could be a good mystery guest. I enjoy your program very much.
That's good to hear, on occasion.
Well, I just tuned it in for the first time, I must say. Anyway, I got a good trivia question for you.
And what's that?
Being that no one sees me or knows who I am, I can say this, I guess. My dad was in the movies for quite some time. And
your
brain damage,
your band was
that for 32 years, that's what he had, because he played that part in the movies.
Wait, I'm sorry, I missed something there. What was in the movies?
My father.
Oh, okay. I thought you said your band, and I was trying to figure
my dad,
out. Your dad was in the movies for how long?
30, well, a total, let's see now, 30. Well, actually, he's been around for 50 years, but waned out about 1958 and made a few movies after that.
Uh-huh.
So,
okay.
He was one of the funniest guys, I think, in the show business, but then it's hard for me to say that when, you know, he's my father.
Is he famous?
Yeah, I'd say so. Let's see if you can guess who it is.
Okay, so this Joe just came back. This person has called up. He said his father has been in the movies for 32 years?
Well, a total, including one of the last movies that he made. Let's see now. That was in 1987. That was the last time he made a movie, and the first time was 1937, in the movie called Dead End.
Is that familiar with you, Joe?
Dead End.
Now, I'm always supposed to guess who he is.
That's not enough information.
Yeah, I gave you enough. I said he was one of the funnier men. In the movie Dead End, of course, he wasn't funny. He was playing one of six poor kids on the East Side.
The Dead End kids?
That's right.
Aha! See, I know my movies.
Which one?
Well, that I don't know.
Hunts Hall?
That's the one.
Really?
Wow.
You guessed it.
That's pretty good.
Wow.
Hunts what was
Hall.
It like being his kid, man?
Just, we, all of us, just celebrated the 50th year of Dead End, of the movie Dead End. And it was that movie that started the Dead End kids off to become East Side Kids and later on the Bowery Boys.
Right.
I thought that would be a little bit of interest.
That's pretty neat. But what was it like being his kid? Was he a funny guy all the time? Did you laugh all the time? I mean,
he was funny in a way, but being your father, you don't realize that. You know, you don't look at your dad and say, hey, Dad, you know, tell me a joke and be stupid and that crazy. And you know, the thing about my dad is that he's one of the most recognizable people on the screen. I mean, everybody loved him. He put you in the world of Walter Mitty.
Mm-hmm.
And he made so many people happy, so many millions of people happy.
Uh-huh.
When he came home, of course, there were problems. Everybody has problems. And to go back on the set at Monogram or at MGM and to have to act funny and stupid, which is a nice way of saying it. I mean, you know, he's not stupid, but I mean, to act that way,
right. Mm-hmm.
That's the hardest job there is, I think, in the world.
Oh, sure. That was expressed pretty well with the in that movie, The Comic, right?
I think you're 100% correct. Leo Gorcey, who was my dad's sidekick, died in 1969. You know, the kids had a terrible life, and drugs and alcohol, and just a few of them remain. Leo, who played Muggsy.
Mm-hmm.
He died in 1969, cirrhosis of the liver. Bobby Jordan died of the same thing, but he died in alimony jail. And a lot of the kids just didn't make it because of those problems. But and my dad, he continues on. He's just, even though he had his problems like that, he, I think he's a survivor. And everybody that sees him, he just had a convention over in Chicago, and 4,500 people showed up just to see him.
Oh, he's still alive. That's good.
He better be.
Well, that's amazing. Now, how was it growing up when you, you know, to have a father that's a movie star? I mean, how did the neighborhood kids treat you?
In high school, I think. It was a breakup in the family. My mom had broken up with my dad. She had lived in Brooklyn. Of course, my dad was born and raised out here. But going out west was a very tough nut to crack for the kids. Everybody would think that they were wise kids, wise guys. And well, as I was growing up and going to high school in Studio City, it wasn't easy. People would say, why don't you put a hat on? Why don't you put on a hat and act stupid like your father?
No.
And, you know, I got to the point where you had friends that say, look, there's the dopey guy. Boy, he looks just like his dad, you know, things like that. Why don't you do your dad? Now, I guess no one in the world can do my father like me because I am my father's son.
So there was a certain amount of resentment there.
Exactly, in high school. As a matter of fact, I wanted to change my name to my mom's name, to my mom's maiden name, Waldman. But I just didn't get to do that. And then one day, I visited my mom here in Brooklyn. She lived in Manhattan Beach and still resides there. And I sat in the, I went to the movies and sat in the balcony of the Lita Theater. This was, I'll never forget this, this was in 1961. And as the second feature, they were the Bowery Boys. And everyone was applauding and saying, oh boy, this is great, we didn't know this was coming on. And I yelled out, that's my dad. And I looked around at me, some of the guys said, oh, why don't you sit down and be quiet, that's your dad. It's a crazy kid, you know. So there I was so proud of that situation. I figured it was time for me to love him again. And unfortunately, being brought up in the Hollywood atmosphere, you don't have time for that.
Really?
You know, you're so worried about protecting yourself and being yourself and going to school and having people like you for yourself. Not because you're somebody's kid.
And do you think that's still true today?
Cable's kid. This is not, we're not talking about Errol Flynn's kid or Cagney. This is Hunts, a B-movie idol. No big deal. But because of the cult following, it has become a big deal now.
What, I kind of, if you don't mind my asking, what were the problems with living under... I mean, now you've said stated pretty much the problems with living under the shadow of a big star. What would you do? Let's say, is there anything you could recommend based on your experience for the reference of someone like to do to bring up a kid in your shadow who has to live in your shadow? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, is there something somebody
who has prominence in the society, whether it be in the movies
or anything? Yeah, is there
media, any part of the media?
Yeah.
And having a kid being brought up under the auspices of that?
Yeah. I mean, you experienced it. Is there anything you could say that would make it better? Anything you'd say to do?
Well, I think the most important thing is to sit back and think for a while of who you are. And if you can cope with that, that's the most important thing. I mean, you have to know that you are your own individual. And that your father is his own individual. And religion also plays an important part in this because there wasn't any. And there isn't any. In being a child star like my dad was, and being with Bogie, Humphrey Bogart, I remember him so vividly. He was such a dear friend of my father's. And being around these people made you feel that you had to pinch yourself every once in a while, even if you were brought up in that experience. But you were only human.
But the common realization is that these are simply human beings. They act the same way.
Cough and sneeze and have to go to the bathroom just like we do. These are people that play cards and lose, gamble and borrow and steal and beg.
After a while, you don't have to pinch yourself anymore. You just sort of become immune to it. Like people freak out when they see a celebrity, but you know, after you've seen a few of them, you can just say, oh yeah, I know that person.
I was called up, you're very smart, I was called up by Showtime, the people at Showtime in California. They said, you know, we understand that you like comedy and that you do a lot of comedy work for people, get starts in the business. I said, yeah. They said, is it true that you look like your dad? I said, yeah. Well, it better be. I mean, I think he's a handsome devil, you know. So they said, would you do us a favor? We'll pay you, but would you come down here and do some shorts for us?
Uh-huh.
You can do your dad.
Oh, just like the kids in high school said.
Yeah. Now, if this was told to me maybe 25 or 30 years ago, I would have said drop dead and hung up the phone.
Uh-huh.
But I was so privileged and so happy to do this that I called up my dad and I said, Dad, you're not going to believe this. Now, here's my father who was out of work. And a guy that would have loved to have played the part of Horace W.C. Jones or Satch again one more time with the baseball cap. And he said to me, oh, isn't that wonderful? Gee, that's great. You know, and he wanted me to come over to the house so I can do, you know, just watch him for a few minutes. Even though you live with him, you still have to, when it's time to act like him, emulate someone. And you have to do it that way. You have to keep your eyes on the ball and practice as best you can.
So, yeah, you made a reference there to what it is that you do. What is that?
Well, I find work, I've done this for a long time, for aspiring comics and writers.
Do you really?
Sure.
No kidding.
And who, or what, anyone, you know, that you feel is especially good?
See, today, who would it be?
And I stress not necessarily famous, but people who you think are qualified. And
well, some of these people have gone on to do commercials. As a matter of fact, one that I got into doing some TV work was the fellow who did Please Don't Squeeze the Shaman. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Mr. Whipple.
Mr. Whipple.
Mr. Whipple. He was around for a long time, but just needed that little nudge to get into, let's say, immortality.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's a household word already.
Really?
Right. The old guy with the glasses, he was funny, and he just looked, he wanted to be recognized and finally got his chance, and even today, if you walk down the street, people recognize him.
Yeah, really, it's Mr. Whipple. That's pretty neat. Wait a second, I want to find out how to get in touch with you now. Really, I mean, what do? You look at somebody's work, they send you material?
Well, the reason, well, as a matter of fact, we are looking for some people now for another Showtime.
Okay, so listen, could you hold on, like, after Eric hangs up?
Wait a minute. Joe, you're an aspiring comic? I didn't know that.
Listen,
we're
Eric.
Aspiring. There's no air conditioning on in there.
Well, I can tell we're in the right business here.
What do you mean? You never listen to my show, kid?
I should say Joe does a very entertaining program on this station. You never know what's going to happen next.
Let me ask you something. What is the name of your program again?
This is called Brain Damage.
Brain Damage.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one of the movies that my dad did, he did 109 of them. Leo looked up, you know, little Mugsy looked up at my father and said, what do you got, brain damage?
You don't have that on tape anywhere, do you?
I'll try to. I have all the movies. I'll try to locate that one. I think it's called Blonde Dynamite.
I know that picture.
If you could get that would be such a great thing to play on our show.
And then Hunt,
what do you have,
say,
brain damage?
My dad would say, no, I think Leo said, what do you got, brain damage? And Hunt would say, gee, thanks a lot. You know, so
you'd make a good loop, you know?
Yeah. He's looking for something, and he said, what are you looking for? Because these things were not censored, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anything, because there were B movies, and they figured what they're going to say wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then my father would look up and say, I lost my comic books. And then Aunt Leo would say, what did you, are you smoking the funny little cigarette again? He said, no, I'm snorting it.
Oh, boy.
You can get away with that. Now, if this was in an A movie, and Errol Flynn had said that, there would be a headline in the old Herald Tribune, right?
Riots in the street and everything, yeah.
Sure. So now, what's going on is that my dad is trying to... they had a big day for him out in California. It was called the Brooklyn Reunion. And all the people that lived in Brooklyn and went to high school in Brooklyn had given my father a tribute last year, last September 13th, for the 50th anniversary of that movie, Dead End.
Oh.
And who was there? Milton Berle, Jan Murray, Tony Franciosca.
Wow.
A whole bunch of people were out there. Mayor Koch sent a telegram.
Wow.
Father ripped it out. He hates things.
Well, I hate to bring this to an end, but we do have to get off the air now. The brothers are up next. But if you don't mind staying on hold so Joe can talk to you after the show.
No problem.
He'll get right to you then.
Nice speaking to you. Have a good sense of humor.
Oh, thank you very much. That's one thing I think is very important, having a good sense
absolutely,
of humor.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I want to tell you something. I think you guys sound better than the guys over at East Side Comedy.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's good to hear.
Pitiful, some of the stuff that you hear down there.
Oh, I mean, I don't frequent the comedy shops, but I've heard, from what I've heard, it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
It can all be summed up like this. The guy comes out on the stage and says, these kids today...
drugs.
You know, these kids today, look at the drugs I've taken. Let me tell you about my girlfriend. It's like, what? It's recycled
Exactly.
Recycled lines.
You don't have to use sex or violence or drugs to be
right.
funny.
No, you don't. You don't need a. You don't need a device.
You, know,
you just need some sense, and it's universal.
Mm-hmm.
Costello, the Three Stooges, they didn't have to do that.
No, even early Bill Cosby is a great example of that. Stuff that the people can people that hear and they laugh. Yeah, that happened. You know, that happened. You know, stuff to identify with.
Hey, maybe the brothers will play some early Bill Cosby. We have some early Bill Cosby records here in the station. That'd be good.
I mean, $75 car is a story that I think that no matter how many times I hear it, it's just so many funny things, and it's timing. It's wit. It's playing with words. It's that kind of stuff.
How would you like to have a dad that went into the Studebaker business? People talked him into going into crazy businesses.
The Studebaker, you know, it's great. Oh, poor Studebaker, man.
They used to say to me, you want to go into business? And my father said, yeah, why not? He said, how about going to the Hudson or Studebaker business? He went in, about 3 weeks later, they dropped the line. He lost about $30,000.
Oh, shit.
He went into a watch business.
Uh-huh.
That company went out of business.
Oh, man.
But those things happen.
Yeah.
Well, Joe Evangelista, thank you very much for stopping by tonight.
Problem.
And I know you're the son of Hans Hall, but what is your name, sir?
Well, my name is Hans Hall Jr., but everybody calls me Gary.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for calling, Gary. We are going to put you on hold so you can talk to us afterwards. I'm Eric Corley here for Brain Damage, and we'll be back again next week. Next week at this time, we'll be saying goodnight, but next week, 2 hours earlier, we'll be saying hello. So tune in then.
Tune in.
You'll hear all kinds of things that you don't think we can do on the radio. Well, we do it anyway. It's 2 minutes after 12 o'clock.
The brothers should be on soon.
The brothers really should be on now.
But there's only one brother.
Well, because they have such a good sense of humor, they don't mind being 2 minutes late, do they? No, they don't.
He said with his hands around Eric's throat.
Okay.
Hey, Eric, I'm 2 minutes late. Help me.
We'll see you again next week then, and so long, I guess. What else can
so
we say?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to June 12th on WUSB Sunday.